Any public comment?
None.
Okay, let's go.
Council Agency Authority Member Taylor.
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Warren.
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Van.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chairman Ramirez.
See.
And Mayor Chairman Shaver.
Here.
Now proceed to closed session at 6:01 PM.
Do we have anything to report out of closed session?
Thank you, Mayor and Council. There's nothing to report.
Great. So I'm going to, at this time, call the regular Stanton Council meeting. A roll call.
Council Agency Authority Member Taylor.
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Warren.
Here.
Council Agency Authority Member Van.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chairman Ramirez.
Here.
And Mayor Chairman Shaver. He's here.
We want to have our pledge. And young Mr. Ramirez, you get to lead us to it.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, Eric, you're up.
Evening, Mayor, members of council, Eric O'Donnell, Townsend Public Affairs. A legislative update, probably the last of the year, winding down up in Sacramento and DC. And in the new year with, sure, a lot of exciting stuff to talk about. Last time we talked, it was at, I believe, the end of August, so it was very close to being the end of the session. A lot of measures that we were going to pass did pass, but just doing a kind of a brief recap right now to let you know, finalize kind of what we've been talking about. But at the end of the end of August, the legislative session wrapped up. The governor had until September 30th, as you know. During that time, in this year, 2,000 bills were introduced. It's slightly under normal for a second year of a two-year session. The governor did sign almost 1,000, vetoed 169, excuse me, veto rate of approximately 60%. That is considerably higher than last year's. Ask yourself why, about double. That's kind of strange. Usually governor's veto rates are pretty consistent throughout their term, barring any sort of outside factor. Our best guess on this one is on most of the vetoed bills, it's a statement of why he almost all of them that were vetoed had the same copy and pasted segment that basically said we are entering into a state of uncertainty with our financial situation right now. So any sort of bills that had an ongoing fiscal cost, despite our massive one-time surplus, he was essentially vetoed. So we did, if you followed the Department of Finance's outlooks, we are, you know, a couple billion dollars in the hole right now when it comes to our expectations for tax revenues in California. That does continue at this pace. We are not going to be looking at it in surplus next year. It'll be a pretty next year. Obviously, things turn around pretty quickly, and California is pretty volatile when it comes to sales tax receipts, income tax, stock market, et cetera. So we'll have to see, but I think that's probably the number one reason for the increase in veto rates. We've talked about these two bills a lot. Just wanted to report out that they were passed and were signed. These are the major land use development bills that were passed this year. Kind of toward the end, they did amend in some provisions when it comes to defining where this can be used and what a commercial corridor is. Commercial corridor is anything 70, 150 feet street right-of-way width. So end-to-end, right-of-way to right-of-way. I'd have to defer to staff in terms of how many Stanton would apply, but based on my knowledge, I'm assuming Boulevard would apply to that, and I'm not sure how many others in the city would apply, but sure would apply for any by right or allowable use housing going in absent any discretionary review from the city. SB 1338, Senator Umberg's care court provision, what we've talked about in that passed and was obviously signed into law, the governor's priority. There was a staggered implementation put it in the bill. And Orange County is one of seven or eight counties that are going to be going first state, getting money from the state first. Almost pilot this, if you will, about a year before other places. I attribute that to Orange County and the county being much more prepared on mental health services than other counties in the state, frankly. I think Orange County has a system built up that's capable of starting this before any other county. Lessons learned coming out of that and Orange County. Either by example on this. AB 2449, we talked about when it comes to remote participation from council members at city or special districts in a post-AB 61 world after the state of emergency. And we'll get to that in a second. Just a reminder, this is a lot more salient now that the state of emergency has been announced to end in February of next year. Board members are allowed to vote as long as for just cause, meaning family emergency, child care emergency, health care, et cetera. And obviously, unforeseen things that come up. Kind of. So you can only use that twice per year, up for each, up to 20% of total leaves that you can get in your body. As long as everyone else. Kind of one off at a one at a time, two at a time, as long as the majority is here. And all of this is to be done without exposing your location, having to invite the public in wherever you are, which is the main thing that folks are trying to get around. So as I said, big news this month, the governor did announce an end to the state of emergency, February 28th, 2023. I was a little shocked personally about how far in advance he was announcing it. It is it was a good 4 months in the future. In his press release, he believes that is warranted for what it's going to take to unwind everything that we've done in state of emergency, ready to go February. Remember, there's a lot of executive orders that are still in effect that will have to emergency authorization for medical staff or devices, etc., that will have to be figured out in the new legislative session in terms of want to make that permanent, if we want to expire, et cetera. But I think for our purposes, the main difference is the AB 361 expiring provision. Move that flexibility. Looking ahead to next year, we will have a new legislature. I've said that before. We're going to have about 25% turnover, pretty huge. It'll continue to get bigger, in 2024, et cetera, as the 2012 term limits come to be. We will have another assembly leadership battle. We had Assemblymember Robert Rivas from the Central Coast challenge Assemblymember Brendan this year for his speakership. Lost that challenge. Pretty public about going back after him again, this probably even this fall and maybe next year. That's a big deal in California, especially the assembly. That's a lot of power. It's a lot of it. You set priorities, you set agendas, you have full control over your committee memberships, beneath chairmanships. All of that has a lot of lasting impact. And then the governor did announce a special session of the legislature to address gas prices. So a special session means we are adjourned until January, but the governor can call a special session whenever he wants to basically bring everyone back to Sacramento. If there's an issue pressing enough, he can bring everyone back from their vacation to address something.
How much teeth does that have?
It's you're in session. It's you got to be back. You don't have to, but you're missing out on your per diem and your other duties. But whether or not anything happens during this special session is up to the legislature. But they have to be there. So there will be. That's a great question, because there will be discussions over. The governor wants to have a talk on windfall taxing, so taxing gas companies over a certain amount of their profit, essentially to prevent price gouging. However, the legislature does not have to pass anything. They can be there and debate it. They do not have to do anything. So I think that's probably the most likely outcome, frankly. I think they're going to go back, and it's going to be this whole two-week, three-week, four-week spectacle of let's talk about it, and I don't think anything can come. Not coincidentally, it is right after the election, as opposed to the election, right? I mean, this was that important. It happened a month ago, but I think it's something to, politically, it's not something that the governor wants to put his allies in, you know, crosshairs before the election. But, you know, it is possible we see something come out of it, whether it's a big change or a small change, we'll have to see, but that'll be beginning of. And then I just wanted to briefly, I know we've only talked about it very, very briefly, but, you know, seen these all before, but just wanted to give you a quick highlight of the propositions that are on the ballot. Maybe some already voted. Not that many propositions this year, frankly. I think we thought we were going to see a lot more. Pretty hard to qualify a proposition now in California with the amount of signatures you need and cost of those signatures. Not a ton that are going to directly affect the city, as far as I can tell. There are a couple of those gambling. One of those gambling propositions, 27, could have had some funding go back to the city for address homelessness. Prop 27. Rest up there. I don't have any predictions necessarily for these, but if I had to guess, I would say a couple of these are going to pass.
So on 26, I mean, could you do a little deeper dive into in-person wagering?
Yeah. So 26 and 27 are pretty funny. They're linked, but in an opposite manner, right? So the proponents of 26 hate 27 and vice versa, right? 26 is the majority of tribes sponsor 26. And what that does is it expands, number one, right now, as you know, tribes can only do certain games, right, in their casinos. They cannot do dice games or roulette. First thing it does is it gives them that authority. They can do dice games and roulette. There's no difference now between a tribe casino and like a Vegas casino, right? That's number one. But number two, it allows them to do in-person sports betting, like at a sports book inside their casinos, where you bet on sporting matches in California, which right now you not do anywhere in California, except at racetracks or, you know, horse racing right there. But sports betting on football, basketball, hockey, and do. So 26 would give the casinos the ability to do it in-house, in-person, on-site. 27 is almost the opposite. It gives the casinos and the tribal casinos the ability to do it via app, right? So FanDuel, DraftKings, etc. Those big nationwide, worldwide companies can come in as long as they have a tribal like sponsor, like a backing, which is going to be very easy to find, right? I mean, imagine Changa having an app that's run by FanDuel that anyone in the state can gamble on. But 27 was trying to by guaranteeing a percentage to go back to the state to address homelessness, the $500 million per year, what they were trying to sweep. We've seen on polling so far for 26 and 27 is that they are fighting so hard that I don't think either are going to pass, frankly. Any other questions? That's it for me tonight.
Thank you, Eric.
I have two before we move on. Out of everything that the governor signed off on, the almost 1,000 that he said yes on, which one's the biggest hit to the budget?
Budget?
Yeah. There's one, like, super inflated one that's really going to, like...
I think the biggest impact to the city, the budget itself would be hard. I'd have to really dive into that. The biggest impact to the city is probably the development bills, 2011 and SB6. I think that's going to be an immediate shift in, you know, policy on land use in terms of developers coming in and, you know, having less pushback in what they want to do, if they want to do something like that.
Sure. Okay.
I think that's going to be the biggest impact.
Okay. And sticking with the state budget theme, how much of the budget is based on the stock market?
I can totally get used to specifics, but in California, it's abnormal how much it does. So it does the stock market and personal income tax, personal capital gains tax, I should say,
right,
is a massive part of our budget, disproportionately to other states. So when we have this $100 billion surplus, a very direct pushback to what happened to the stock market during that time.
Exactly.
No, skyrocketed. Okay. But at the same time, that means we're very vulnerable, right? Okay. Extremely vulnerable to our general fund that way. But I can get you that percentage. There is a percentage. I can get you.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah,
thanks. That's it for me.
Anyone else? Thank you, Eric.
Thanks.
Okay, we'll move on to the consent calendar, items 9A and 9D. Was there anybody who want to pull anything?
No, Mr. Mayor, we have none.
Anybody have any pull?
Nope.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Go ahead.
Member Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Warren?
Yes.
Councilmember Van?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ramirez?
See.
And Mayor Schauer?
Yes. Okay, we have no public hearings, no unfinished business, no new business. Anybody request to speak?
None.
Any written communications?
We also have none.
I'll close the public hearing. We have no written communications. Mayor, Chair, Council initiated business. Any announcements? Anything for a future meeting?
Can we make an announcement regarding Xenia and what we're doing on Saturday?
Of course not. We have no pumpkins. I'm just
that
teasing.
Not true.
I'm just teasing.
That is not true.
I'm just teasing. Go ahead, Zaya.
We have pumpkins.
Not as many as we usually do.
We have more hay than we had ever, let me tell you.
Good evening, Mayor and council members. Thank you. So as a reminder, we do have our big Halloween festival this Saturday at Sandman Central Park. Festivities begin from 4 to 8 p.m. We did leave a schedule of the costume contest. We have carnival games, inflatables, obstacle course. A number of our community partners coming out to support us with resources and games, food trucks, entertainment for all. We are still looking for one more judge for the costume contest, so if any council members would like to participate, we are taking volunteers. And I would like to thank Councilmember Ramirez for his generous donation of pumpkins and hay. Thank you.
Also, I want to publicly thank Xenia and the staff for the assistance they gave us and direction for our food drive this weekend. Although we didn't use any personnel, we sold out. So we had not one lemon left. So it was very successful. Thank you, Xenia. Okay, now we can move on to number B, anything for future? Future study? Okay, we'll move on to 15D, Madam Clerk.
Mayor, item 15D is City Council initiated item, discussion regarding compensation for members of the City Council. At the October 11, 2022 City Council meeting, Councilmember Warren requested that this item be agendized for discussion. And I will leave that to Ms. Warren for presentation. Yes. So we have the three-step process where you ask for the item to be agendized for discussion. It's agendized for discussion to speak to your report to see if we can get council consensus for staff to move forward on the item.
Okay. The reason I brought it up is I've been on council since 2008 and we never have 1 cent of pay raise, no cost of living increases, no nothing. And anyway, I think it's about that we get something, and Garden Grove just increased their council salary after 30 years. They decided that they needed a raise as well. So I think it's something that we should look at and at least come into the fold of where the other cities in Orange County are, and we don't have to use Irvine or Laguna Beach as our comparison.
Right.
But just to take a look at it, because I think it's beyond time for us to do that, and that's why I brought it up. So I think we need to research the other cities, get an idea of what they're doing, and then we can make a decision accordingly.
I would support that.
Well, there you go. I got Mr. Taylor. Who's next?
I'll support. There's your three. Anybody else want to comment? Okay.
I will say, if I may, look at actual, you only have to do a few hours. I mean, the really strict, you know, minor, like, if you really go to absolute duties, obviously we meet hours and hours with constituents, doing all these other things, whatever. But it's, you know, the bare minimum, it's really only 2 hours.
On. Then all the things you have to drive to, and all the things you attend outside of this,
How much money?
$10,000.
Which part?
Oh, go to 10,000?
Yeah.
Oh,
we could probably get 30 because it's 5% a year. We haven't had a raise in 20 years. That's 100% raise.
Let's look at it.
So it'd be 20,000.
Because if it's too much, we won't do it.
Yeah, you got to realize, too, that we don't know who the future people are going to be on this council.
Yes.
There may be somebody that's got a part-time job or is unemployed.
Yes.
And, you know, if they come here, there's detracts from their salary. How are they going to survive?
Well, and that's a fair comment. I mean, even if we do vote in one direction or the other, when does this actually kick in?
A big one?
When does this actually kick in? Go ahead.
So it's not allowed to, the sitting council cannot vote on their own pay raise. So whenever it's adopted, it wouldn't take effect until after the next election in 2020.
Okay.
That's good.
So we have a motion by Warren, a second by Taylor.
I thought it was after the last election.
If we had done it before November 8th, then it would be, but we're not going to have time to make it before.
Are you sure? I always thought it was before. It was before. It was during the election or the current election.
This is definitely something, if we do have consensus, we can move forward, and that'll be something that we'll address in the staff report during research. If that's okay, Mr. Mayor?
Well, let me ask another question from legal. Can we give ourselves a raise? Can we give a per diem, or can we give ourselves a cost of living? Can we give ourselves expense? We did that one year, expense, $20, I think, $15.
Mayor and Council, this item regarding council compensation is statutorily prescribed. So
I know, I understand, but let's take it out of the statutory compensation and put it into a vote on, as an example, expense account. Because we did that when that wasn't during an election year or after election year.
That is something I'd have to run by our. Statutes that likely govern that as well.
Okay.
So wrap that up and bring that back for agenda.
Okay.
Carol, what's your motion?
My motion is to direct staff to look into other cities in Orange County and get an idea of what the current landscape is as far as remuneration for, you know, for being on council, and bring that back.
I also like to see what sort of resources other and some house members get money to events, some house members get money to outreach services, things like that. So maybe not money that directly benefits the council, but money that's tied into their goals as well.
Valentine gets a policy advisor.
Well,
but that would include some council members get full medical, some get, I mean, there's a whole litany of things that cities put in for council members, so it would be nice to just get an overview.
So you want to look at the whole benefit package then?
Yeah.
Salary?
Okay. We have a motion by Warren, a second by Taylor. All in favor?
Is there, wait a minute, with that, is that an amendment?
That was the motion to do what?
I know, but is it with an amendment?
There was no motion, official motion and second.
Yeah.
Okay, but are we adding on the other research?
This is the motion for that research.
I know, but what's the research going to include?
It's going to include searching other Orange County and neighboring cities to take a look at what they're offering their council, get an idea and make a decision accordingly, and also research medical benefit package and things like that to offer council. And then also Ms. Vann's item to include if there's some type of, or Mr. Mayor, per diem, expense account, cost of living increase, and then Ms. Vann's for the payment being outreach tied into services for their role as a council member. Good?
That's perfect. Thank you.
Okay, let's start. Do we have a motion? Warren, do we have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we received council consensus. We'll move forward with research and staff report at a future meeting.
Go ahead, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Mayor, item 15E, City Council initiate item, discussions regarding the city's ordinance pertaining to shopping carts. At the October 11th, 2022 City Council meeting, Mayor Shaver requested that this item be agendized for discussion. Mayor Shaver is requesting to discuss the city's ordinance addressing shopping carts and anti-theft shopping cart solution.
Thank you. So did we get a staff report on this at all?
No, sir. So at this time, when you requested the item to go forward, we're going to discuss it, and we need to get council consensus to move forward with that direction.
Okay. Anybody would like to comment? Go ahead, Carol.
There's obviously the geofencing technology for shopping carts that's out there, but there's also geotagging, which are the little tags that you can put on your luggage or your dog, and you can track your luggage and dog. They're starting to do that with golf carts. Shopping carts. And the thing is, it's of benefit to the business that uses it, because the business can track how a shopper shops in their store, what path do they take, should they rearrange their products to take advantage of that. And it also could be hidden in the shopping cart, whether it's in the handle or wherever else. And so they can track their shopping carts, they can track their customers, so that might be an additional benefit to the store owner to use that.
Would that be something our sheriff's department could use to track stolen property?
If they can get it tagged before it gets stolen.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to say too. It's if we can track it and we know that, you know, that it's at this location, that we could definitely. Yeah, I mean, that could help us for sure.
Carol, what's the technology for if it goes past, let's say, 75 feet, the tires lock?
Yeah, that's what Target uses over at Notcatilla.
Wouldn't that be more useful though?
That's a geofencing one.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a great one. GPS, if the tags are GPS, which is global positioning system, so
right.
You have a lot wider area on that. So if somebody decides to take one of our golf carts, shopping carts down in Santa Ana to go shopping with, Captain Walters could figure out where that shopping cart was.
Or we just require business partners to do geo, and then they don't have to chase carts down because they'll just lock within 50 or 75 feet.
Correct.
The thing with wheels, unfortunately, is they just take them off and put on a wheel that doesn't have it, and then they're able to keep going.
They modify shopping carts?
Yeah, they buy them at Home Depot. They buy the wheels at Home Depot, take off the one with the device in it, and put on another
We're
wheel.
We're seriously talking about custom wheels on a shopping cart, right?
Welcome to the new world. This is, here we go, that's
okay.
What they do.
Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't say that it didn't happen.
Mr. Wren, thoughts on that?
He doesn't want to do it because he'll also point to where there's an encampment.
We have seen quite a variety of modified shopping carts. In the past, the virtual gating element, we actually have something already in the municipal code that we can provide updates on for next meeting. There has been reluctance in the past by the members of the business community because there's quite a heavy expense involved with implementing those virtual gates.
Okay.
It might be good to look at the size of the business, maybe. Somebody like Food for Less and Home Depot would have the funds to be able to do the geo-tracking, where some of the smaller businesses probably wouldn't be able to.
Well, a lot of small businesses.
I think the virtual...
Yeah, I know, we have a lot of small
they don't have carts.
I think the virtual gating, the vast majority, probably over 95% of the carts that we see out and about that originate from Stanton-based businesses are from three separate locations, that being Food for Less, Home Depot, and Walmart. Yeah. So the other carts that we do come across are from one-offs, and we don't really have any of those in town. They're from folks.
Do all three of those companies use the geo-tracking or the...
Actually, none of them have that in place at this time. There has been, as I said before, since I've been here, this issue has come up, and there has been reluctance by the businesses due to the costs associated.
Those three could definitely afford it.
You know, the pricing has come down on that too. So you might want to take another look at
it. So I'll turn to the city manager. ARPA money left for something like this?
If you mean to subsidize these privately owned corporations to put the technology in, I mean, there is ARPA money left. I would be very careful about using it for that. We would have to look at gift of public funds to three distinct large corporations.
I wanted to quickly ask, so you're saying in our ordinance we're requiring the geofencing, but it hasn't been by any
So in advance of the item next week, I should say we have looked at it. It has been discussed. My understanding is that there are components in there, but we've never required it. The way that it's written, and we'll provide that information, doesn't necessarily require it, but there's components of the municipal code that address it. So we'll get you more information on it.
So there's a theory there, but no practice?
Correct. Based on the reluctance of the businesses. There are obviously costs associated with replacing carts, but my understanding the last time this was addressed, the one-time costs to the businesses were not appreciated.
They're big. Those are three big chains. Come on, Walmart. Kroger.
I'd like to know how much it costs our staff and our city and our taxpayers to retrieve all these carts all the time to help these businesses.
Exactly. So why aren't we covering that cost?
Carts. Last time Home Depot bought carts, they bought. It cost them $40,000.
But if we have 10 of them sitting in our city yard that we pay two of our guys to. 2 hours to retrieve the cart, why aren't we billing Home Depot for our time to clean up their mess?
Well, I haven't really seen any Home Depot carts at the city yard for a long time.
So let's quantify this. I mean, how many carts are we talking a day?
You mean how many are out there or how many a day? Because there's a gazillion out there. So
in terms of the number that staff retrieves, I would say 5 to 7. A day. It obviously varies time of year, length of day, summertime, and then it's also associated with the amount of the homeless population out there. During times where we are in a good state related to the homeless folks, it's one a day. But we can obviously beef up during the when we do cart sweeps periodically. We're aiming for once every 3 weeks based on staff availability. When we do those, we'll get between 15 and 20 carts. But that involves physically making contact with individuals, having them remove all of their personal items, and then taking the cart from them.
Target uses a stripe in the parking lot. You can't take it over these stripes, or it blocks the carts.
Right.
Well, is it really the city's responsibility to collect shopping carts?
No.
So why are we doing it?
Well, because they don't want them in our streets.
They want
them
white?
Yeah.
Still not our job.
That's why we need to be filling.
Do we have time to get shopping carts?
No, that's why we have to enforce the geo. Enforce the geo, this goes away.
Well, it depends on what kind of geo it is. So.
Yeah. We can require something that's proven to work. Those, the three major stores.
I brought it up because Carol asked me to, and I support her.
Okay. All right. Back to you.
She always asks me, why are we not enforcing our shopping cart ordinance?
That I do.
We do regularly enforce the shopping cart ordinance on a daily basis.
I was mostly meaning the geofencing portion of it. Not you guys do a great job. It's not against you guys at all.
Yeah, but it's not our job to do that, Jim. I mean, we need to paint curbs red. We need to take care of our infrastructure. I'm serious.
Well, when we've gone around the city at night, after 6 o'clock, the number of shopping carts triples on the street. I mean, it's like they come out of the woodwork. I don't know, but it definitely is a time of day issue, too. And I think the geotagging or fencing would definitely be the best way to go, since we've already apparently got it on the books.
Well, there's no punitive.
Let's just warn them and start enforcing.
There's no punitive damage or accountability for somebody to take a shopping cart and use it on our streets.
Well,
that's the problem.
We should amend that.
Because it's a nothing. It's a nothing thing.
It costs money. It is a something.
It's a nothing. If nobody's breaking the law, that it's too down on the chain. It's not a big deal. I'm not. I'm just telling you. There's more high priority things for our police to do than chase shopping carts.
Oh, I don't think the police should do it. This should be a code enforcement. Yeah. Well, I don't think the police should go after shopping carts.
Well,
they don't have that kind of time.
When does code enforcement have time to do it?
Well, they can.
They're doing it now.
Yeah, they should be doing it now. He's doing cart sweeps. The hawks are picking them up sometimes. I don't know how often, but the hawks do pick them up and give them plastic bags and take the cart.
So why don't we look at finding the companies that are adding to our
require them to put in?
Oh, we have a really good healthy discussion very shortly.
Yeah, okay.
Healthy tension is fine.
Yep. All we need is three.
So, Carol, back to you. What direction?
This was Dave's.
Right.
Originally, I could make a motion.
Go ahead.
I make a motion that we look into the cost of geotracking with the trackers, the cost of geofencing with the wheels, look at the cost it actually does cost us to keep up with these things and chase them down and get them back to the owners, and how we can compensate ourselves for that. And that's my motion.
You want to add the practice of other cities?
Yes. Cities. Let's just dig into it and see.
I think we should do cities that have the demographics that we have. There's no sense in going to LaSalle and finding out how many shopping carts get stolen from their local centers.
LaSalle or Westminster. I mean, Westminster or Garden Grove would be close to our demographics and the number of big box stores.
And what programs are successful?
Okay.
So it's a motion by Councilmember Warren. Do we have a second on Councilmember Warren's motion?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Robert?
Yes.
Question, or are you in favor?
No, I was just saying yes.
Any opposed? Hearing none, Council receives consensus to move forward with research on this item. Mr. Mayor, we'll now move forward with item 15F. City Council initiated item, discussions regarding obtaining services assistance for the city's Public Safety Services Department and Public Works Division. At the October 11th, 2022 City Council meeting, Mayor Shaver requested that this item be agendized for discussion. Mayor Shaver is requesting a report back from staff regarding opportunities for additional assistance for the city's Public Safety Services Department and Public Works Division regarding issues related to trash and debris, maintenance of parks, right-of-ways, bus stops and sidewalks, retrieval of shopping carts, and public safety within city business shopping centers. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I did send this out to the staff. So we have two areas. It will affect public works and probably code enforcement. So Jim, can we help you? Is there anything we can do to help you with this?
Council, in terms of overall issues related to the general conditions of the street, obviously there is always more opportunity to improve that. I think the stance that we've taken with Chief Walters coming aboard and needing some time to right the ship, I think we are headed the right direction. But I've unofficially been promised till Christmas to get everything figured out. Terms of making the streets look better. We have been inundated with homeless folks over the past probably 60 days. We took some pretty significant steps this week with Union Pacific Railroad to address those. So I think generally speaking, we are in pretty good shape, but at the same time, there's a lot of more, work to do.
Do you need more staff or assistance to bring our levels up higher?
I think, to be honest, I think we are sufficiently staffed. Obviously, there's a balance across the city, across different departments. I mean, I think it'd be unfair to say we need 5 more people or anything like that. Obviously, we could use folks. We could probably use some equipment. I know that's one of the things being discussed with potential residual ARPA funding, but that's to be determined. I think moving forward with the revised efforts of the Sheriff's Department, I think we're going to head the right direction here shortly.
Would it be beneficial if we use some of our funding for a short term to get all caught up and have a clean slate, and then that would make enforcement so much easier and cleanup so much easier?
I do agree with definitely taking some steps in the short term to address some of the residual issues from prior administrations related to homelessness, et cetera. Meeting with the city manager and Chief Walters this week, there is a plan in place to utilize some funding to associate some sheriff's personnel directly with our homeless outreach coordinators. And I think that direct association and usage of some short-term money can be particularly helpful. And I think that is where we stand right now. That's the gap that is needed. There is, oddly enough, a weather component to all this. The timing of it is critical. And I think with what the city manager has discussed related to that funding, if we're able to implement that in short order and make progress before winter months and the shorter days and some weather, I think we can do some open field running here in the next month or two and get us in a much better spot before whatever form of winter we have comes.
So let me ask you a question, Jim. If we hired private security for 3 weeks, and they, for those 3 weeks, every day, took every shopping cart off the city, do you think that would solve our shopping cart problem or get us moving in the right direction?
I think it's a, I think anything to address some of the public safety issues is valuable. However, the usage of that money to fund someone full-time to get 5 to 7 shopping carts a day, I think that could be utilized. I'm particularly interested in the direct link between the homeless outreach coordinators and sheriff's personnel, and those two positions being tied together. That's where the largest gap that's been identified by the city manager, Chief Walters, and I, that's where that largest gap has existed. I think that's would be my recommendation for any funding at this point. And I think that the secondary effects of that would be limiting shopping carts, trash, et cetera.
Okay, because I counted the shopping carts in the city today before the meeting, and there's quite a few. I won't go into the numbers. But if we eliminated all of those off the street, and then people realize that if you have it on the street, somebody's going to come get it from you, it wouldn't take very long for us to clean the city up, and then people would get the message that they can't do that, right?
Absolutely. I think part of the one of the bullet points, if you will, related to the sheriff's personnel being directly tied to the homeless outreach coordinators, the elimination of the homeless individuals having shopping carts with them. The first thing I do every morning is do up and down. I travel the entire length of beach in the city. And this morning we had 2 shopping carts, one of which was being pushed by an individual, one of which was a smaller one by Bauman's Market that we threw in a truck. So as far as usage of funds, which obviously trying to be considerate of, I think the best way to use that would be to utilize sheriff's personnel along with our HOCs.
So the majority of shopping carts are created by the unsheltered.
Correct.
So if we solve for the unsheltered, we solve for the shopping cart.
Correct. That's one of the intended secondary effects of addressing homeless folks.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, it's my understanding that we can't enforce any of that because we have no beds at this time. Is that correct?
No.
Somebody told me that. Who told me that? Is that you?
We have available beds.
Right. It, There's a multi-step process to be able to enforce our codes. You have to offer services a minimum number of times, then we escalate to code enforcement, then we escalate to the sheriff's department. We needed all three prongs of the resources ready and available. Now, that actual day before you can enforce, if they decide to take services because now they know there's a sheriff's deputy ready to cite or arrest, if we did not have a bed that night when they agreed to take services, then we could not follow through. That's the distinction. So we are, as Mr. Wren mentioned, we are having internal meetings on how we make sure that we have all the proper players and all the proper resources in place. And once we have all of that, then we absolutely can enforce. So,
as of today, though, we can't, right?
Up to now, the personnel piece that has been missing on a consistent basis due to the number of calls for service and the prioritization of those calls has been a sheriff's deputy attached to the code enforcement and homeless outreach coordinator team. They come when they can, again, depending on the priority of the existing service calls. So one of the internal discussions we've been having is what it would look like if we had a dedicated deputy solely to travel with this team, focused, and would not be pulled away for any other service calls, would not be pulled away in any other capacity. That plus the homeless outreach coordinators being able to connect with, there are available beds at Placentia and Buena Park Navigation Shelter. We're also trying to connect to other resources. That plus that availability of beds needs to be available for us to enforce to the maximum allowable.
There's also a component of the members of the homeless population. They have to indicate a willingness to participate in a shelter situation, and we are currently well over 95% refusal of services. So we use that as a green light to take the necessary action. And we do check bed availability first thing every morning. We internally are in contact related to that, and it helps us determine our method of enforcement on a day-by-day basis.
Is there still a problem with the time of day where they stop taking them, anybody admitted to the shelters, like after 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. or something like that?
So most shelters, the nighttime admission is an issue, but it's honestly, it's not a very big one. The nature of the folks, if, trying to politely say this, many of the unsheltered folks will use that as an excuse in the overnight hours. On a very, very rare occasion, there'll be someone who's legitimately interested in shelter overnight, and what typically happens at that stage is we essentially create an appointment with them first thing in the morning. It's in prior times, it was reasonably common for me to get a call overnight or through the night indicating there's an individual that was interested in legitimately participating in the program, and essentially we would have them stand by for a few hours and we'd respond to them first thing. There's been situations where there was emergencies where I would respond and we'd get somebody in a motel. Damian Fonseca has done that on occasion. But that's for extreme circumstances where it's a family, something of that nature. The vast majority of the folks that we're in contact with, we are in contact with them through the day. And then I'm not particularly comfortable sending my homeless outreach coordinators unarmed in the middle of the night with the individuals that we deal with.
On the appointment you make for the next morning, just off the top of your head, what would be the percentage maybe of the ones that actually show up?
20%.
Okay, 1 in 5.
And that's of the, I'm 100% committed. I'm going in. If you were here, we'd go right now. And then the next morning, it's down to about 20%. So I've been, in the past, I've been forbidden from comparing us to other cities, but we are actually way better than anybody around us. That being said, if there is a lot of the, if you do see bodies, in many cases, it's a result of our own enforcement. It's the Orange County deputies working the flood control channels. We worked with UPR on the tracks last week, so we displaced a number of folks. For instance, when Garden Grove enforces or Westminster enforces in the area of Beach and 22, we'll pick up some bodies, but we're usually pretty adept at getting them back to where they came from shortly. So the total number of bodies is somewhat where it was. It's just, we need winter, and we need people to want to, a lot of these folks do have places to go, and we need them to go back there.
The railroad tracks, well, they're not railroad tracks, but the right of way by my house, they clean it up, you guys come out and clean it up, the next day they're back. So there doesn't seem to be any kind of penalty in them trespassing, having shopping carts there, having their tents up. Do we have any kind of penalty? I hate to use the word penalty, but some kind of something that makes it, you know, not to want to come back the next day.
Correct. So I worked with Captain Walters today, and we actually, citations were issued on the railroad tracks off of Catella. There's plans throughout the week for the folks that have cycled back through. We have removed a large amount of personal items and stored those at the city yard. So that has disrupted their flow and made me particularly popular as usual. But the citations were issued this afternoon.
And Councilmember Taylor, that goes back to the original comment I made where we did not have the third consistent resource of that three-pronged strategy because we need a deputy who has the ability to cite and arrest. And so that's why internally we're talking about a trial period where we do attach a deputy dedicated to this team to travel with them throughout the day to all of the areas where the homeless are congregating.
Well, I think that's a great idea. Are they going to be behavioral health trained?
That's a discussion that we are having with Captain Walters to determine if that is necessary. Many of the deputies are trained. They don't necessarily have that title, so we're determining is that a necessary title, and if there's additional training they should go to, we can certainly accommodate that prior to this potentially special assignment.
Is it that they have to commit so many, complete so many classes to get there?
I think the idea, too, is to rely upon the homeless outreach coordinators as well. I think the system that was put in place prior to this kind of reset was redundant in many ways, where we had homeless outreach coordinators, which were supported by council, and then those efforts were replicated by the Sheriff's Department, where we need the third leg there, which would be the enforcement component, and the discussions that we've had are more focused on that.
Well, that sounds very promising. I like that.
Jim and Chief, if we were to fund the additional officers to do that and have a concerted effort for a couple of weeks, would that get us back on track?
I believe so.
Would that expedite things, you think?
We'd like more than a couple weeks.
No,
wait.
I mean,
I'm still saying give me till Christmas.
I'm not saying cure it in a couple of weeks. I'm saying if we started something and we did a concerted effort to do it by paying a little extra money, bringing in some help, and doing what we need to do where we have a deficiency and get caught up. Look, we had a two-year hiatus. I can't believe we've recovered as much as we have already. It's a miracle. But we need to expedite it because winter's coming and they're going to be finding a place on our streets. And you know, it's the same guys. I know every one of them, just like you do, Jim. It's the same people day after day after day. And if all we need to do is to give Chief Walters, if he would like it, I'm offering it to him, somebody to help with that and get us moving a little faster, I'm going to do that if the council will support it.
Chief Walters, do you want to speak to that?
Mr. Mayor and in City Council, so yes, we have the deputy sheriffs right now, currently, that have the training currently that can fill this role currently. And we have a different type of thought process with regards to the enforcement kind of component of it. After we give the service speeches, after we, you know, allow for all the different kind of details that we want to give, we have the components, and I think the leadership now, you know, with Sergeant Contreras and I, to kind of push forth that, you know, kind of the enforcement side of the equation. We have the California Vehicle Code, we have the Penal Code, we have health, the Health and Safety Code, the WNI Code. We have all these codes that we can enforce the law. So yes, to have extra bodies. And I think the key thing is that before we did, what doesn't exist is the behavioral health deputy position in Stanton. That doesn't exist. It's a homeless liaison officer, which is an ancillary job. We had to restructure that. It was a Deputy Hicks. He was the homeless liaison officer, not the behavioral health deputy position, because that doesn't exist here in Stanton. We do have a bureau for that, and that actually has, the spots for it. So pertaining to Stanton, with this extra funding, with a staff member, that's assigned just to the Hawks, they don't get called away for services, they don't get called away for traffic accidents, they don't get called away for anything. Their sole purpose is to be with the Hawks, to be the enforcement side of the equation. I think that could, help on the three-prong approach, that we would see the citations go up, we would see the arrests go up, and we have kind of narrowed down to two deputies that I think have a very a go-get 'em attitude with regards to, with enforcing the law. And then, like I said, if they're attached to, they're attached to the Hawks, then we can still offer services too. It's not just, hey, we're going to take all the homeless to jail. That's not what we're there for. But I think in the big scheme of things, sir, I think it's a, for me, I think it's a good idea. And if we have the fundings, I mean, that would help tremendously.
Okay, so I'm going to make a motion. And I'd like to get the support for it, that if Mr. Wren needs some additional help in his area, or if the chief feels that he needs some additional help in his area, he'll meet with our city manager, and they can discuss what can be done to improve the program that we have and get us caught up. And if the chief needs to have a couple of extra people to implement the program and fill that void, then I think that can be determined by those two talking to our city manager. All I'm asking you for is your blessing, because I'm sure that they will manage it in the right way. But we also owe this to the voters and the people that put us in office, because right now the number one issue in this city is homelessness. And whether it's true or it's not true, we do have some deficiencies and shortcomings that can be addressed by these two. And so I want to give them an open plate to do what they need to do with our staff to get it taken care of. And I'll make that as a motion.
I would enthusiastically make a second on that.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment before. I think it's important to note that this is a process and not an event. While I think we'll see immediate success, I think it'll take some time to get to the point where we need to go. I'm assuming that they'll be reporting on a weekly basis just to be able to track our trends, which is great. And, Hannah touched on it earlier. In order for some to be successful, it has to be repeatable. Right? And right now we're missing that void. We're missing that third wheel, if you will. And if we have that consistently, word spreads. And when word spreads, it solves itself. So, yeah, I'm all for it as well. So I heard a motion. I heard a second.
Madam Clerk, when a call roll.
We have a motion by Mayor Shaver, a second by Councilmember Taylor. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And Council receives.
Okay, gentlemen, go get them.
Well,
I said go get them. I didn't say go not do it.
No, I didn't say that either. I'm saying it's step one.
Well, you want me to tell them don't do it? No, I'm serious. Anything we can do to help you, you guys know what you need. Let's get it done.
Well, this sounds like a great plan, though. It's all
well, they're professionals. Let them go do what they do best.
Yep, absolutely.
Now we gave them the tools. I beg your pardon?
In the reporting, will we have a financial arm to that, so we'll know the outlay of money?
Yeah, I'm assuming there's some kind of commitment, not just from a time frame, but also what that dollar amount looks like, right?
We'll include that in the staff report.
Okay, perfect. And you know what? Let me just reiterate one thing, folks, just to bring back my argument. The money that we spent in time with our city employees, cleaning up messes, the amount of money we spent and lost, and also with our police department taking care of these petty things where they could be doing other more important things. If you take the destruction that's being caused, the crime that's going on, which is related to what we're talking about tonight, and you take a look at that financial cost, it's going to be a mere pittance of what this we just voted on tonight to get help. I'm guaranteeing you that. Anyway, thank you. Okay. You're up, Gary. Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Clerk. You can introduce it, please.
Next item before council is item 15G. City Council initiated item, discussion regarding the sale and use of safe and sane fireworks within the city of Stanton. At the July 12, 2022 City Council meeting, Councilmember Taylor requested that this item be agendized for discussion. Councilmember Taylor is requesting to discuss the future sale and use of safe and sane fireworks within the city.
Well, this would be the third time in almost 4 years that I brought this up. And the two previous times I lost the vote on it, 3-2 both times. The mayor actually asked me to bring this up when we had the group of people in here from Lalampara Mobile Home Park on Lampson, I believe. They were pretty upset, and this was the idea, I think, was to put Alice and myself on a committee to come up with solutions. I'm not sure. I think I know what the best solution is, but obviously nobody has agreed with me at this point. But in our past two police captains that we've had here have both agreed, and I'd like to get your opinion on this also, that if we did eliminate safe and sane fireworks, making them illegal, it would be much easier to determine which are the safe and sane, which we have to worry about now, versus which are the illegal fireworks that officers, code enforcement, whoever's enforcing this, it would be much easier to cut out the illegal fireworks. Would you agree with that? And can you give me any opinion on that?
Yeah, you know, I don't disagree with that. I think the hard part for the law enforcement side of the equation is to be able to determine what's, you know, legal, what's illegal, based on that. Most of the time our, you know, kind of, I think our interactions with the fireworks is late at night, and it's, hey, this is going off here, and we get there and there's nobody there. And we have to be able to see them kind of light these things off. That's the hard part about enforcing, I think, that in general. For us to take a look at whether we don't have the fireworks here in Stanton or whether we do, is going to be that component of near neighboring other cities where we see a lot of influx come in. And with regards to this last one, you know, this last fourth that we just did, I had a lot of help out here. We did a pretty good job with the enforcement side of it. And I think that's where, like I said, if whether they are a sparkler or where they are one of those little kind of flower things, or if it's the big bottle rockets and stuff like that, it's hard to determine from our standpoint on what's, you know, what's illegal and what's legal just from the fireworks side of it. So
if they were all illegal, it wouldn't be that, it would make it a little simpler.
Because we can't determine which is legal, which is not legal. It's you know, they're going off and we're just trying to do our job to get there. And then when we do get there, if we can enforce it, you know, we will. This past the past fourth, we actually cited 7, which is,
yeah, no, that's
great. That's triple from the previous year. But again, that's the hard part. If they were all illegal, yeah, I guess would be make it a little bit easier for us.
Would it be possible to put in our code that just possessing these in your front yard or something, even if we don't see you shooting them off, that just having them, the property owner or the people there would be responsible for having them there? Is there anything we could do like that?
How are you going to enforce it?
With the officers.
The whole city?
Well, it's what we're doing now. The only change would be is that we would, instead of having to see them, shoot them off, just possessing them.
But it's illegal to possess illegal fireworks now?
You're the one that asked me to do this a third time.
No, I'm just telling you, Gary.
I'm tired of losing all this.
Gary, it's illegal to possess illegal fireworks. And you can go to jail for that if you have a lot of it.
Is that true? Is that correct?
Captain Walters, is that if they're just in possession of them and they're not actually actively utilizing them? Is that something you could cite?
Yes, and again, I think for the illegal part of it, we have to see them with them, hold them, light them off. They have to physically see them. It can't just be word of mouth, have a phone call,
grass or sidewalk,
a drone. We don't enforce that. We have to actually see it. That's what you know, as of right now, the code's, you know, states for us.
So Gary, let's think of it this way. Well, let's say we outlaw them or just don't. We ban fireworks. What's the probability of those same three people coming here next 4th of July complaining about fireworks going off?
Well, it's more than three, but no, I think we'll probably have more people. I don't see this as getting better for some reason.
Exactly.
It seems like it's getting worse each year.
No, exactly.
It seems like we have to come up with something to try to get it under control a little better. Maybe, that's why I was kind of wondering if there's a law. Could we use drones for them to actually spot people? And no, I don't know the legal.
You know, Gary, I'll be honest with you, because I know the firework market over the years. If we outlawed fireworks, we would have 10 times as many illegal, because number one, illegal are cheaper. And number two, if they can't have safe and sane, they're going to have fireworks. And also, I will tell you that we have video. John Warren is taking video. And if you look at those video, our surrounding cities are a war zone, and they have no fireworks allowed there.
Well,
and there are war zones,
close,
and
so
that's worse than us.
Again, I understand that.
So it's just endemic.
Chief, go ahead. Put your thought.
I think I think the good point was made with regards to the neighboring cities. Just for example, some of the loud explosions that this one particular park was hearing wasn't from Stanton. It's from a neighboring city. And so that's the hard part. We go to enforce, and we're there, and it's we're looking around going, where's the marks on the ground? Where's the smoke? I mean, you know, some stuff that we can pay. Okay, it was going off here. And then what I had was I had some of our plainclothes SWAT operators here, and we were in some of these areas just to, you know, start looking, just start paying attention, just start see if we can see some of this stuff. And some of the response was, hey, sir, we see them, but they're actually in Garden Grove, they're in Buena Park, they're in Anaheim, they're not in Stanton. But it sounds, based on the explosions and some of the stuff, they're loud. And it's, so I mean, that's the part going back to what we, you know, kind of enforcement-wise, we have to see it, we have to be there, which we did. We actually, you know, saw 7 illegal fireworks.
No,
we confiscated those, and those are pretty hefty fines. But no, that's the hard part.
I think we had a successful year, actually.
I agree.
But, 7, you know, out of the number that was out there. I mean, it's probably, we probably couldn't have done any better, but it's just a drop in the bucket, too.
And, you know, in the future, Gary, we know every house that's going to do it. It's the same people year after year, the same address, the same street. And I think we're beginning to chip away at that. And maybe if we continue to do that, because we did better this year, I think it's going to really help.
At the end of every holiday season, or every 4th of July, the next morning, my guys, we get here early, and we actually go through the whole city, look for burn marks, look for large debris, and then those areas are targeted the next year, are given materials in advance of 4th of July, and those addresses are given to the Sheriff's Department. In my personal opinion, the folks that show up here from La Lampara, we can count on them every year. If there wasn't a single firework in the city, that's turned into their issue. I look at it as what we use to measure success. In the past 4 years, in terms of injuries, fires, things of that nature, we had one shed and one bush burn in the past 4 years. So it's going to be loud. That's the way it's going to be. No one's gotten hurt. We lost a shed and we lost a bush. So I think we're trending the right way with Captain Walters. We issued 7 sites.
Yeah,
and I think it's my concern is to your comment about if the mortars are sitting there, they're no one's sitting out in the front yard with a bunch of mortars. So it's they know they're the same people that are doing
if
it illegally now.
Out there, could we confiscate them if we had an officer there and saw that they're?
Sure. My understanding is that any illegal firework can be confiscated at any time, but that's not typically the situation when you're in the neighborhoods that
they don't
this happens.
Them out and get them ready to fire or anything like
that. It's not like a buffet deal where there's all the mortars out. So.
Okay. I'm not going to do this a fourth time.
Gary, let me tell you why I did this.
I don't know why I'm doing this a third time.
I did it for a very simple reason. There were people from the city of Stanton that were concerned and had a concern about it. It's our responsibility as elected officials to talk about it.
I understand that.
And whether or not we can solve the problem or not, we did what was right tonight. And I think tonight we did answer a lot of questions that we would be able to share with them and let them know what's going on. That's our job.
Okay. Just in the next 4 years, please give it to somebody else.
Well, if you promise not to bring it up anymore,
I won't bring it up. I give up. I've lost this one.
Okay, well, I won't hold you to that because I know you. No, I'm not saying that you're not keeping your word. I just know you care. So
I do care, and it really irritates me on those nights. The dogs, the people with the dogs.
Well, welcome to my two shepherds.
The mobile homes. Those mobile homes, that must sound terrible in them.
But you realize, too, that I live right down the street from it. I hear the same stuff.
And it's a big, huge insulated
house. It's on
house.
The other side of the fence.
It's got to be better in a house than it does in those places.
It's the phobia of an ember falling on one of their roofs.
That would worry me.
That's what it is. It's that phobia.
I just want to know, city in Orange County, that we can actually say, hey, let's stop what they're doing.
No, you know who's worse than anybody? Huntington Beach. And it's horrible there.
The illegal fireworks are illegal. And those people, you know, they go out and they hunt people down, they bring them in by truck, you know, or they go over to Nevada or Arizona or wherever, and they bring them and they smuggle them into California. And they're going to do that. I mean, they're operating illegally to begin with. Whether Stanton bans them or not, they're going to smuggle them in. That's just their MO in life. And then, you know, it's unfortunate, but Captain Walters got the guy in our neighborhood last year,
I think 7 is good. I actually, from 2 to 7, I think that's fantastic. And like you said, the fines aren't little. And hopefully that'll spread a little bit. Maybe, you know, 4 or 5% will get better, maybe 10%. So I definitely approve of all that.
Okay.
Can I get a vote on my motion then? What's my motion to stop selling safe and sane fireworks in the city of Stanton?
And just to be clear, Mr. Taylor is providing a discussion to the city council consensus on having staff move forward with the banning of safe and sane fireworks. At a future meeting.
Yeah, I'm not going to support it, Gary, for a very simple reason. It's a simple reason because then people hope that we're going to do that, and we really, even if we did it, we can't control it. And so it gives them false hope, and it just kind of creates a negative thing in the community.
Well, in a baseball metaphor, this would be my third strike.
Yes. Now, let me throw out a curveball then, so we stick to baseball. Can we put this to a citizen vote? Next election.
I brought that up last time.
I remember.
Of course.
No, it's not going to pass.
It might pass.
Gary, it's not going to pass, and I'll tell you why it won't pass.
I would adjust my motion to that.
Gary, let me tell you why it won't pass. Okay, I mean, if you want to waste the city's money putting it on the ballot, that's fine. But let me tell you why. Because the firework industry will spend millions of dollars in advertisement. All the charities in Orange County will kick in with their arguments. And they will go bending the ear of the voters. And you gotta get it by one vote. It ain't gonna happen.
Well, I think it would happen.
Okay, well, I bet you $100 it won't. I give you 30 extra votes too.
We can move forward with the motion, or we can move forward with the receiving file.
From a political standpoint, it would take all the pressure off the council for the next 10 years. We put this up to your vote. The citizens said, what can we do about it? Nothing.
Be scared.
It's fine. Yeah. Gary, don't worry about it.
That's not going to get you booted out of office.
Yeah.
I'm termed out already.
Well, see?
There you go.
I think the receive and file sounds like
a good idea. Okay. All in favor with the receive and file?
Yes.
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 No.
3-2.
There you go. 3-2 again.
3-2 again.
A vote.
That's okay. I'd be okay with a vote.
Okay, moving on. Yeah, let's put our sales tax back on the ballot. That'd be fun.
still need a vote on.
Okay, we are now on item number. Yeah, we're 16. Yeah, go ahead.
I have no items.
Okay, I think from our city attorney.
Thank you, Mayor. I have no items this evening.
You're up, Chief.
Okay, good evening, Mr. Mayor, City Council. Tonight I'll be covering the September stats for the city of Stanton for the police services. In September, Stanton deputies, they responded to 1,402 calls. That's up from last month. That's an average of 46 per day. When they're not being assigned to calls for service, deputy observed 327 violations of law, and they acted on them appropriately with warning, with citations, and with arrests. They made 66 total arrests. There were 18 felony bookings, 12 misdemeanor bookings, a tent warrant arrest, and then one DUI booking. And they also issued 25 misdemeanor citations. The Stanton deputies also, they issued 32 traffic citations. On a side note, for the past 2.5 months, the motor deputy has been kind of coming back from broken hand. He's now back. I've listened to him the last probably 4 days now, and the radio is constant. So he's been all over the place where last month I had a research analyst kind of do a, for me, kind of where all the traffic accidents were happening, some of our, kind of mark callouts, some of our DUI type of areas. And that's where he's been the last 4 days. It was kind of shocking. A lot of our crashes were happening, on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, which I thought was going to be the complete opposite. And it was during from 6 to 11. And that's right when he works. So it's actually perfect. He's been very active the last 4 days. I saw him today, and he just kind of mentioned, I'm tired. So, which is great, because he's been off for 2.5 months. So we're looking forward to that. Our gang unit, they've arrested two documented gang members for various crimes. We're up to a total of 21. It was nice that starting yesterday, I'm sorry, starting on last Friday, a Stanton deputy was just got put on the gang unit. So that's really, really good for the city of Stanton. Part of the North gang team, so he's still here in Stanton. So that's really good for that team. There were zero homicides, there were zero rapes, there were 5 robberies, 26 violent assaults, 14 burglaries, 32 thefts, 9 stolen vehicles, and there were no arsons. The Stanton investigators, they both had a very busy month again. There was 136 total cases assigned to them. They currently have 57 open, and they closed 79, which is, it's phenomenal, both of them. So I'd like to advise the board that Investigator Bassey, she was fantastic. She has now got assigned to the special, to the victims unit. That's a very tough job to take, and she took it. And so we now have a new Stanton investigator, and that's Investigator Jackson. He's already hitting the ground running. He brings a wealth of knowledge, a wealth of experience. But I'm very proud, Investigator Bassey, she worked really hard, and again, she will be missed. Our special enforcement team, again, another very, very busy month. They arrested 22. There were 11 felonies. There were 11 misdemeanors. They issued 9 citations, and those citations, 4 for public nudity, 2 for possession of a narcotic, 2 for open containers, and then 1 for trespassing. They contacted 20 homeless folks. They all declined services. They contacted 30 prostitutes, and they actually arrested 4 pimps, which is very large. I haven't seen that in a long time. To go after the pimps is kind of what they were looking at. And again, that's a pretty big deal for the city of Stanton right now. Those numbers are very large. They seized 47.22 grams of meth, 3.66 grams of fentanyl, 1.5 grams of crack cocaine, and they also they recovered two firearms and three stolen vehicles. So this, you know, again, the special enforcement team, they did a really good job this month. They're both, you know, again, you know, they're very hardworking, and I want to give a special thank you to their sergeant who's sitting next to me, Sergeant Contreras. He's the admin sergeant, he's the investigative sergeant, and he's also the, you know, the Special Enforcement Bureau sergeant, or the, I'm sorry, the Special Enforcement Team sergeant. He didn't know I was going to throw him under the bus like this, but again, I want to say thank you for, you know, his leadership. The response times for the Priority 1 calls, 4 minutes, 21 seconds. Again, very, very fast. The Priority 2 calls was 18 minutes, 4 seconds, and the Priority 3 calls was 31 minutes. With regards to the homeless outreach, so we begin the process of sending some of our staff to some of the additional trainings. They just came out. We've got some in November, some in December, which is it's homeless, but it's also our mental health training. So once they get through phase three, they'll have the same training as Deputy Hicks, you know, so that's really good. We are succession planning right now for the homeless liaison officer, which we discussed earlier. We have two individuals right now that we've kind of looking at. They're very, you know, kind of young in their career, but they're go-getters, and I'm looking forward to kind of talking to both of them and you know, kind of, you know, starting to move forward with this. So that's coming up here. And then we're looking at right now, based on the availability of staff from, you know, from the reserves, from the BHB Bureau, you know, from our own folks, to try to do a homeless outreach session in the month of December. With the holidays, that was, it's kind of done on purpose. We're hoping that people will, you know, will want service to get off the streets. It's going to be cold, and so we're kind of looking at that is what we're looking at right now. But it's also, you know, with all the holidays coming, with, you know, with our staff, to see, you know, kind of throughout the department, if, you know, people take time off, you know, for vacations and stuff. So as soon as I get that, I'll be sending that to the city, you know, to the city, to the city manager, to the board, and, you know, and to Jim Wren as well. Okay, just about done. For the community update, the Coffee with a Cop was a big success. I want to say thank you to the board for going. I think it was, you know, kind of fun. We got to talk, you know, to, you know, a wide variety, you know, different people, and our staff really liked it, which is kind of fun too. So that was really nice. Throughout the past several months, I spoke last meeting about it, but our 8222 Star Street, I just drove by today. I was pleasantly, you know, I was very surprised, and I was very happy that one of the structures has been taken down. It was like a pop-up tent. I think that's actually gone. A lot of the trash is gone. It's, there is nobody there. It's still fenced off. It's still red tagged. The 25 people, you know, are not there. I think the part that's worked so well is, you know, kind of working with code enforcement has truly helped that. And so, like I said, I want to say thank you, you know, to Jim. You know, it, like I said, that was kind of an eyesore for us too. But again, it seems like it's going in the right direction there. So we've had numerous burglaries at a storage facility that's off Dale Street. So this evening, through our determination and through our investigative work, our investigators were able to detain two individuals who had been in possession of the stolen property, and so we were able to give that property back to the owners, and those two have now gone to jail. So that was a big deal today, we also we were there last week, and we detained two that were in the progress of actually doing the burglaries, and we also took those two to jail. So we're going in the right direction. Our staff knows about it. There's been briefing items about it, and we're starting to, you know, kind of go in that realm of, you know, the enforcement part of that. And we're also getting people calling us, and that's, I think, the biggest thing that we've got is they're actually calling us and, hey, they're going right now. So that's been, you know, that's been really nice. And again, I want to just kind of, you know, as I end here, just thank the city staff, and it's not just, you know, those who are here, but all city staff. The teamwork that I've gotten, the teamwork that the Sheriff's Department has seen, has been truly outstanding, and I just want to say thank you. And I'm open to any questions.
Thank you, thank you, and thank you. The management skills are fantastic. You see a problem, you work on it. If the first solution doesn't work, you revise the solution and try something different. That's what a manager does, and we do see it, and we do appreciate it. So thank you.
Yes, sir, and I think the nice part is...
Thank you, Sergeant Contreras.
You know, I think the nice part is that I'm able to make those phone calls and just ask, you know, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think if we tried this? And I think the relationship, I think with the city manager, you know, I think with Jim Wren's shop, it's making it really easy for me. So, like I said, just to thank them again. Like I said, the process it's been fun so far.
But just don't do too good a job, or we'll lose you like
you
are.
He's good. So,
yes, ma'am.
Yeah, whatever you do, Chief, don't tell anybody. Except us.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Anything else before the council? Okay. Everybody have a great weekend coming up. Good night, Irene.